The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James and welcome to the show brought to you by The Athletic UK. And it's the Thursday Club. We're going to be doing the final word on Peterborough from Saturday, reviewing Fulham's six in a row, one of our best winning records since those heady to Ghana days. We're also going to discuss Niskin's Cabano a little bit in depth. And I've got a little game at the end as well called Bronze, Silver, Gold, which I'm very excited to debut today. Thursday Club normally is myself, Peter and Jack, but no Peter today. So just myself and Jack Collins. It feels like old times.
Yeah, it's an old school podcast. Hello, listeners. Hello, Sammy. How are you? You good?
Yeah, fine, thank you. How are you enjoying the international break? No football yet, although I imagine by the time this goes out, the Republic could have done Alexander Mitrovic a very big favour indeed if they can pull off the impossible against Portugal tonight.
Yeah, the battle of the real CR7s, isn't it?
Yes.
Callum Robinson versus Cristiano Ronaldo. 14-1 on Paddy Power for Callum Robinson to outscore Cristiano tonight. There you go. There's one for if this goes out beforehand, then you can jump on that one. But yeah, it'd be interesting. I'd love to do Mitro a favour. That'd be good value. So let's see if Cyrus can help him out and see what happens there.
It is one of the most interesting kind of battles in the UEFA qualifying for the World Cup, because you've got that Portugal-Serbia game on, is it Sunday night, Sunday night. And it's basically a winner takes all. Whatever happens tonight between the Republic and Portugal, it comes down to whoever wins that game will go in automatically to the World Cup.
Yeah, it does. But I suppose if Ireland win tonight or even get a point, it means that Serbia would only need to go to Portugal and get a point. So that would be useful, I'd imagine, as opposed to having to go there and win. Now, if you've got a strike force of the potency of Alexander Mitrovic and Dusan Vlahovic, I imagine you're not too worried about scoring goals, but as keeping them out at the other end is going to be a problem. This strike force are going to be the hottest in Europe right now. So Vlahovic has just broken two records for Fiorentina. So he's become the first player since Luca Toni or Gabriel Batistuta to score 23 goals in a calendar year for Fiorentina. Luca Toni got 24. Vlahovic has got 25 and he got him in October. So there's 2 months left for him to continue chasing that record and setting it even higher. And Mitrovic, as we very well know, is literally on fire, 20 goals in 17 games. I was looking up his goal contribution record earlier. And he's got 5 assists as well, which means that he's currently averaging a goal contribution every 58 minutes this season, which is arguably ludicrous, if I'm honest. That's basically unplayable. So yeah, I hope that we can do him a favour, and then fingers crossed Mitro can fire Serbia into glory.
It is actually, obviously it's important for Mitrovic. You've got World Cup qualification on the line, but given what happened a year ago against Scotland for Serbia, where they missed out on the Euros because of his penalty kick. This is a big weekend for Mitro.
Opportunity for redemption. I mean, look, the chances are that Serbia are going to be going into the playoffs. Like, you know, much as they can dream, and much as this is a good Serbia side, it's probably a better Portugal one. And the chances are they're going to be in the playoffs. I don't think they'll mind that too much. I think they'll fancy their chances in the playoffs. They're a very, very good side, this Serbia team.
Yeah, indeed. And there's a great article kind of built around Alexander Mitrovic, which went live on The Athletic today. Peter was a part of writing it as well, but it was a staff article, you know, where they pulled all the shots out for this one.
Used to do a round table for Lewis.
Yeah, exactly. Who is the greatest championship striker? And it's looking at some of the stats and facts. And obviously Mitrovic comes out very well, particularly in the best minutes per goal ratio, the best of any championship striker with a minimum of 35 goals. If you want to read that, plus all of Peter's analysis, we're going to touch on some of it later, especially with Niskin's Cabano, then you can get 33% off the subscription by going to theathletic.com/Fulham Pod. Now, Jack, there's not a lot more to say on Saturday's game against Peterborough that wasn't said in the last podcast where we discussed the game in detail. But six wins in a row is maybe something that actually has been taken a little bit for granted, I feel like, considering when actually you realise the last time we even got a run close to this level was back in that famous Tagana season in 2000-2001, where we started with 11 consecutive victories. I think when wins are coming so naturally, so easy, you forget like how big a deal it is to win six football matches in a row. If you compare to where we were at the last international break after that Coventry game, it's chalk and cheese, the position that we find ourselves in now.
Yeah, I think so. And it's intriguing, isn't it? Because we obviously sing about the 23 and all of those things that you look at them, right? But even in the 23, I think we got 5 and a 4, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So you look at the way that it kind of pans out and how that happens. And, you know, we always talk about unbeaten runs, right? And unbeaten runs are important because they're like lengths of time and they show you that you feel kind of invincible. But there's something about a winning run, isn't there? There's something about just being like, and just clocking up points, like they're going out of fashion. And I think considering what we've just seen for Fulham, especially given the context which it's in, like you look at the fact that we came out of this, came into the last international break on such a low, right? Given the Coventry game, where we'd got to and been like, oh, have we overrated this team? Did we think we were, did we get ahead of ourselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And while all of the above might have been true, we might have got ahead of ourselves and there are good teams in this division and there are going to be teams that will cause us problems. The way to answer those critics, the way to do that is to emphatically win your next couple of games. And Fulham have done that, right? And I think what's maybe best about this run is that there's been a couple of different elements to it, right? We haven't quite come from behind, sure, but we got pegged back against QPR and we picked up points from being pegged back for the first time this season. Then we went on some absolute juggernaut games where we, you know, felt like we were invincible. There were certain games in the mix that we had to grind out, like Peterborough, and I'd argue a little bit like Cardiff as well, where we kind of struggled to really break down teams and still got it done, got it over the line. And the kind of mix up in those different types of victories, we've had walks in the park, we've had grinds, we've had battles against local rivals. It's intriguing to see that Fulham have come out on top on all of those. And I just hope that this time, you know, last time I said when we were in the international break, there might just be a time to just breathe, reset and go again. And it looks like that's what's happened. And look, Marcus Silva can take all the credit for that because he was able to revitalize a team which had come off a tricky period with players, some players that had gone, some players that had stayed, fixed it all up, changed Marek Rodak in goal, gave him the chance despite the fact that he wasn't there during that international break. He'd been out on international duty. Gazanik was in camp. And Rodak still got the gloves and got the opportunity. And you've got to think, look at that and think that's very, very good management. So when you look at all that, you just hope that this international break gives us a little bit of time to recharge, reset the batteries and go again on the same thing. And it doesn't, as it did in the first time. We obviously started the season well, went into an international break, struggled a little bit, went into an international break, did really well, went into an international break, question mark, question mark, question mark.
Yeah.
There's this point you go, right, can we now build on that? But I do think that as good as we were over the first couple of games of the season, this feels like a very different Fulham. This feels like a Fulham juggernaut that has rolled into gear. And I just hope the international break this time doesn't kind of calm that down. It just allows us to build onwards with recharged batteries.
Yeah, I felt like that game again after the game against Peterborough. I personally feel like a break has come almost at the perfect time, really. I felt like quite a few players on Saturday were a bit leggy. Tim Ream came on Twitter afterwards to say that he was actually genuinely knackered. And probably I feel like an international break is what's helping Fulham. Interesting now that we obviously have the 6 month slog now. There's no more kind of international break as a buffer when maybe we get a bit tired after 6 or 7 games. But hopefully this might invigorate Fulham for the next kind of big five that are coming up before Christmas. You have those a simpler run of fixtures before the big one on the horizon, which is Bournemouth. So I'm just hoping that really, apart from a few internationals that will obviously be a little bit jaded, the likes of Anthony Robinson and the Jamaica boys who are heading out west, I think it's probably come at a good time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that we did look a bit leggy on Saturday and we looked a bit like we needed a breather. And you know, there's always the question mark, and we said it on the post Blackburn podcast, that there's this question mark over it sometimes that you go, ooh, do you get a hangover from that kind of win? Like, are the highs so high that you can also barely live up to them because just how it's gone down? But that said, you know, at the moment, we can't really, there's no cause for complaint about anything. And I think that that's important to look at. And, you know, we got the job done at Peterborough. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't easy. It wasn't the joyful, absolute walk in the park that perhaps the travelling faithful were hoping for. But those are the kind of performances the Mark Champions, I tweeted at the time, you know, those are the ones you get over the line when you don't, you're not feeling great, you're not playing great, and you somehow get it done because you claw and you scratch and you bite and you get it done, and, you know, use the post, use your goalkeeper, take those moments that, of luck that come your way, and suddenly Alexander Mitrovic has rose highest and nodded one into the corner, and that's fine, that'll do, thank you very much, 3 points in the pocket and back on the train. And I think that there is an element of, great, that's done. Now we've got obviously games that are on paper a lot easier. You look at Derby and Barnsley, now obviously Derby wouldn't be where they are without the deduction, so you've got to take that league position with a pinch of salt. But Barnsley have been poor this season. And then Preston, who are a bit of an bizarre quantity in some ways, because they're 17th, they've been really poor, and then they went and beat Bournemouth and then lost 3-0 to Forest. They're a bit of a team that doesn't really make any sense. So the next three are going to be important. Obviously, every game's important. It's the Championship. But you look at those and think, okay, slightly easier run, sure. But we'd also look at Peterborough and they say, on paper, this is an easier game than Blackburn. And it wasn't. So, you know, it all kind of comes with the caveat that the Championship is the Championship. But I feel like we're in a good place.
Yeah, and no idea yet who's going to be managing Barnsley for that game next Saturday. Michael Flynn is the favourite to take over at Barnsley. Alex Neil has been mentioned as well. Flynn was the former Newport County manager who I just really remember felt like causing an FA Cup upset every single season.
Oh yeah, they loved an FA Cup.
Down at Rodney Parade.
I actually once saw Newport County beat Met Police FC in the second preliminary round of the FA Cup when I was covering it once. So there you go. That's my association to Michael Flynn and Newport County. In that game, I got the huge honour of standing on the touchline next to Fulham legend Keanu Marsh Brown. So, you know, there are scenes everywhere, really. I had a great time.
Yeah, indeed. We're going to discuss Niskin's Cabano in just a second, but I've got a couple of questions for you that have come in via email. hello@fulhamish.co.uk. We do read the emails, so feel free to send them in. First one from Aaron Trainer says, how long do you think it will be before Harrison Reeves finds the back of the net? He's been playing more of the eight role this season with Seri sitting in the six. He's getting forward a lot more in games recently and had a great chance in the game against Blackburn. He said, thoughts on that. Also says, love the podcast, long time listener, and keep up the great work. He's an Irish lad as well, Jack, so a man after your heart.
Yeah, Aaron and I are, I believe, in a group chat together, so we're able to have
the Fulham fans WhatsApp group.
Yeah, great value, great fun.
I love that. Well, I don't know if it is the case, but it's just every Irish Fulham fan in this one WhatsApp group.
Well, I don't know if everyone is. I'm sure there are people who are going to hear this and be like, hey, why am I not in that group if that weird little plastic from London is? But on the whole, yeah, there's a lot of people in it. It's a great group and it does good value and good. There's a lot of fun in it. So, yeah. Look, Harrison will score, Aaron. I'm sure he will. I hope against hope that it's either an absolute 30-yard thunderbolt or it goes in off his arse off a corner. Those are the two options for Harrison Reed to score a goal, I think. So I think at some point, look, he's getting in the positions, he's getting forward, he's pushing onwards, and we're seeing him in that kind of box-to-box role. And I mean, I've obviously used this comparison before, but I've said at some points, the way that he plays, especially with someone behind him to spray the ball around, reminds me a little bit of N'Golo Kante. Not as good. I'd love to say that he was as good as N'Golo, but he's not at that level. But on the whole, they have very similar game styles, right? They're both dynamic, energetic eights. I like in that kind of eight role because it gives them the freedom to not have to just sit and block. And it gives them also the point that you don't want Harrison Reed on the ball all the time. You want someone like Seri stroking it about because that's what they're incredibly good at. You want Harrison Reed bombing up and down, getting about, making a nuisance of himself, popping up in the right positions, making tackles, annoying opposition, etc., etc., etc. And there was a season a couple of years back, I think it was the season that Jorginho signed for Chelsea, where N'Golo Kante scored 4 or 5 goals in the first half of the season. And everyone was going, oh God, he's added goals to his game. What can't he do? Et cetera, et cetera. But that was a flash in the pan, but it did come from the fact that he just happened to be in those positions more because he'd been removed from that deeper role and allowed to kind of flourish a little bit further forward, mostly in a kind of destructive sense, but also just by the whole nature of moving a player into a new role, they become more of a threat during attacking phases because of the position they're standing in the pitch. I think that's what we're seeing with Harrison at the moment. And I think that because of that, the goals will come. It's not going to be, he's suddenly not going to turn into a prolific goal scorer, I don't believe. But on the whole, I think that when you're looking at someone who's at the edge of the box, in and around it a little bit more, that there is going to come a time where the ball falls out to him and he strikes it through a crowd of bodies and it just finds the back of the net. I think it's a matter of time.
You do realise that that is what made Kevin McDonald so special. Can hit it from 25 yards a la Millwall, and it can also go in off his arse. It takes a truly unique player to be able to do both.
A genuine genius.
Speaking of long-range goals, this is something that I got bored the other day and worked out that as far as I've been able to calculate this season, Fulham have only scored 2 goals this year from outside the penalty box, or certainly that I can remember. And actually, I would argue that only one of those was a screamer, which would be Tom Cairney's rocket against Cardiff. Harry Wilson scored quite a good goal from outside the box on the opening day of the season against Middlesbrough. Wouldn't put it in the screamer territory.
Bobby Reid's one against QPR outside the box.
It's close, but again, not quite what I mean in terms of the screamer. But if it was, it's on the borderline. Interesting, I went back to 18-19, last time we were in the Championship. By this time that season, we'd scored 5 from outside the box. Now, normally you would maybe hear this stat on its own and think, oh, that's not a good thing. I actually think that this is showing everything that we criticised Parker for and what I think is better about this Marco Silva team. Do you know what it was that made me realise this? Is I saw Fulham posting the October Goal of the Month competition. And I just remember thinking, other than Tom Cairney's absolute bullet against Cardiff, that all the goals weren't that amazing in terms of a Goal of the Month. Now, I always think club-focused Goal of the Month competitions just don't quite work. I think you want it to be like Match of the Day, and it never quite carries the same weight unless there's just been...
I enjoyed it. It always makes me laugh how obviously everything's completely silent apart from the ones for the first team where they have Jim and Jamie absolutely yapping over them.
Yeah.
And so like it gives it a bit of a different... Like I would say, like if it'd be my piece of advice to club, just get them like post-commentators. It's not that hard. Just like
no,
get someone
it sounds
to
so bad.
Just get someone to stand over them and just explain what's going on. I don't think it'd be that hard. Or strip the sound out of the first team ones. Either way, you can't have some commentated and not some uncommentated.
No, it does sound a bit rubbish when it's just like, but also I guess it's also the difference in like camera equipment, because for the average under 18s game, I think they just use one of those cameras that's not even manned. It's like it just like tracks the ball, and then obviously you've got like Sky Sports multicam operation. It's almost just you pick the first team goals because you can't half the time see the ones. But yeah, I just thought that actually that was quite a telling little nugget of info that just shows you really how this Fulham team really wants to hit the byline, doesn't necessarily want to score wonder goals and doesn't need to, because we're creating so many opportunities in areas that actually matter rather than worldies from outside the box, even though we did have a kind of team that could pull them off with Cairney, Knockhart, Cav, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. It's 100% a really good thing. And I think you go back to the dominant City sides, right, of a couple of years ago. How many goals did they score just by putting the ball in the same area over and over and over and over again? Because people just can't deal with that cutback from the byline. And Fulham haven't been quite the same, but we've been creating chances in the right areas. And I think we talked about this at the time. So we're over-reliant on moments of individual quality to bail us out of bad group performances. And you could never say that about this Fulham side. Yes, we're reliant on Alexander Mitrovic in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net, but we're not reliant on moments of him pulling it out, beating 5 players and sticking one away. We're reliant on him taking the chances that we are creating for him as a group. And that's a massive, massive bonus. And I think that the more that Fulham continue to score goals from, this is going to sound ridiculous, and I don't want it to sound like a real stats thing, but George Singer would call this, you know, creating high XG art chances, right? We're creating chances that you're more likely to score from 6 yards out than you are from 35. That is just a fact. And so if you create high quality chances in the area, you are increasing your likelihood massively of scoring. And while XG is a bit of a ridiculous stat taken individually, right? Like you can, any game can have a ridiculous XG swing on it because you can be more or less clinical than perhaps you envisaged. Over a season, XG tends to pan out. Like the team that creates the most chances and has the highest chances across the course of a season, or racks up the most expected goals from their shots and chances created per season, tend to be the teams at the top of the league. And the teams that create the least tend to be the ones at the bottom. And it really is as simple as that. And, you know, when you take all that into context, the fact that Fulham are creating a plethora of high quality chances in the box and making opportunities for our strikers, there's a reason that Mitrovic is on 20 goals. It's not just because Mitrovic is on really, really good streak of form, right? He is. Don't take that away from him. It's also because he's being given chances in the right areas that are easier to convert than the ones that he was being given in years before. And that is a good thing. And that's why I don't think this is a flash in the pan. Look, I don't know if Mitrovic is going to score 50 goals. I don't think he is. I think that's a streak that's a bit too far. But I think he'll get close to 40 because I think that, you know, barring injuries, touch wood, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if he stays fit and Fulham stay playing the way that they're playing, I think he'll get close to 40 because the amount of chances and high quality chances we're creating in the opposition box, in areas that we want to be in, are good. And that's a massive, massive bonus.
Guy Whittingham, 42 goals, 92-93. Mitro, that is still the aim. Come on, mate. We know you can do it. That guy Whittingham, Mitro has a lot more goals than he did at this stage of the season, by the way. But he just had the most like mad 10 to 15 games towards the end of the season. I don't know if the other teams are just fully given up.
There's a moment where Charlie Austin, I believe, scored 17 in 14 at one point for Burnley.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the rest of the season petered out. Now, again, I don't think that's going to happen here, but it has been done before. There's been big flash, not flashes in the pan, because 14 is quarter of a season, more third of a season. But on the whole, you know, there are ups and downs with goal scoring and striking, and there will be purple patches and patches that don't quite come as easily.
Yeah. One more before we take a break and discuss Niskin Scabano. Just got a really nice email here from Mark Whittock, who sent this yesterday. He said, "Hello to all that make up the Fulhamish podcast. I found your podcast 3 or 4 years ago. What an enjoyable find you've been. Have not missed one single podcast over the years. And the ones that you did in the early days of the pandemic were much needed relief in such a dark time. I just wanted to reach out and share my story of how I came to fall in love with Fulham. I'm 56 years old and I've lived in Northern California my entire life. My late father, on the other hand, was born and raised in Fulham, just mere blocks away from the cottage." I love that you can sense the American coming through. "From the youngest of ages, I can remember listening to shortwave radio with my father every Saturday for Fulham's results. I can tell you I was hooked. My dad would tell me so much about the Fulham players. His favourites were Mullery and Bobby Moore. He's no longer here to share stories of years gone by or breakdown games, and that's a huge void in my life. Your podcast, though, I'm truly grateful for. It's my one connection with Fulham fans that I can rely on, so I appreciate your pre- and post-game analysis. I particularly enjoy your Thursday shows with Sammy, Jack and Peter." Well, I'm sorry that Peter's not here to be the best part of that trio. "Being able to watch every Fulham game plays is such a treat, especially when I think how we used to be huddled up listening to the BBC at 9 a.m. on Saturdays just to keep up with Fulham. In closing, I've never been to Fulham or seen them play, but it's definitely on my bucket list. Keep up the good work, from Mark." Well, Mark, if you ever make it over to Craven Cottage, definitely give us a shout. We'd love to have a beer with you.
Yeah, it's amazing. What a great story.
Great story. Lovely email. Thank you so much for getting in touch with that one. So we're going to take a break, and afterwards we're going to discuss Niskin Scabano. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast, and it's Sammy James here with Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
We've got some naughty garms, by the way, some new merch on the Fulhamish shop.
Ben Garman.
I implore you to go check it out, fulhamish.co.uk/shop. It's all very nice stuff. We wanted to create some merch that you'd wear to the cottage and wear down the pub. Give it a look if you fancy getting something good for Christmas. And Jack, let's discuss Niskins Cabano. Mm. Peter wrote an article about him in The Athletic with Mark Kerry, who is one of the Athletic's stats guys.
Also one of the nicest men on earth, by the way.
Oh, I've never met Mark.
Yeah,
is he?
Mark is absolutely lovely. Like, oh, a beautiful. Really, really nice guy.
Well, that makes this article even more worth your time. And it's just looking at the run that Schaefer, Niskins, has had in the side. And look, he got the assist on Saturday. Another one chalked up for Niskins this season. Obviously, picked up a couple of goals in that Blackburn match as well. And I heard Not the Top 20 doing some analysis on Niskins Cabano this week as well, Jack. And they basically just said, what a baffling player. A player that Fulham have basically sidelined every time that we've gone up to the Premier League. Last year, he had to go on loan to Middlesbrough, and it wasn't a particularly great time for Niskins. And I think we all probably thought his time at Fulham was coming to an end this summer. He's been behind so many different wingers over the years. You think back to a couple of years ago when it was Knockhart and Cavallero who got the nod. He always found it quite hard to get past Floyd Ayite. Last year in the Premier League, we brought in Ademola Lookman. And we've always known that Niskins is a really fun guy. You only have to watch some of his kind of video diaries that used to do on the preseason tours. Bring those back, by the way. They are much missed. So I just look at what Niskins is doing, and I don't think I've ever just been more delighted for a Fulham player to be on form. Yes, I enjoy watching Mitrovic, do his thing in front of the Hammersmith end. And there's been lots of other great Fulham players that I've enjoyed over the years. But there's just something about Niskins, a little bit of a rags to riches story in terms of his Fulham career and what we're seeing. Do you think that now his place in that front three is 100% set? Look, of course, he could go on a bad run of form. But right now, all evidence points that he is going to be that man on the left wing for the whole season, barring injuries or, as I say, a massive reduction in his performances.
Yeah, I think Silver and Bumwater have both seen this and gone, well, that's a player that can make a difference in the final third. And also, perhaps more than anything, have seen a player that can make a difference when things are tight, right? Like, we spent so much time under Scott Parker bemoaning the fact that when teams set up to block us out, to stop Fulham playing, we were unable to break us down. I'm talking Championship, obviously, rather than the Premier League. And we spent ages, and Parker's response, as we kind of alluded to, I suppose, in the first half of the show, was to bombard from distance, right? To get Harry Arter shooting from 30 yards, to get Cavallero cutting inside and shooting from outside the box. Same with Knockhart. That's what we saw more of. Whereas Silva's response seems to be, right, let's get a player in here who we can get the ball to and can work in seconds, needs millimeters of space. He could, trick his way out of a phone box. And I think that's the important thing here, is that he's found someone who can break down low blocks, break down teams who are set in, break down defenders who only want to shut out and clear, right? And that's a massive advantage at this point in the Championship, because we're going to come up against more and more sides who go, God, Fulham are scary, aren't they? And try and just block us out. And there, it's easier away from home, obviously, because home crowds will always want their teams to at least try and show some sort of fight. But on the whole, there are always going to be teams who come to the cottage, shut up shop and go, we'll have a point, please. And thank you. And we will run tail between our legs with that point. Niskins Cabano, and I think we saw it a couple of weeks back with that absolutely ludicrous piece of skill and how it all went down. And, just didn't look like he was going anywhere. And suddenly he was between two players and into the penalty box and away. And he's always had that ability. What we're seeing it now is focused in the right areas of the pitch. What you see with Niskins is, he's high and he's wide. He's not being asked massively to cut inside and drill shots in, because he's not hugely brilliant at it, to be honest. What we're seeing is a manager who has asked Niskins to beat his man and get to the byline, or beat his man and cut inside after he's beaten his man and do that, or beat his man, chuck back and get a cross in, all of which he's very, very good at, right? What he's not good at is doing what Harry Wilson does, for example, right? Drifting in off his flank to try and get shots in on goal from the other side. And with the two of them, we've reached a really nice balance either side of Mitrovic, where we have the ability to go wide and get the fullbacks over and flick in, or we have the ability to go over to Wilson, let him drift inside and get that right back round the outside as if we're going Ryan Fredericks-esque. And it gives Fulham two different avenues, which is something we haven't seen for ages. Just the ability to really, really go two different ways. Or, you know, obviously Fulham have a midfield general who can pick out passes wherever they are. And we can go straight through the middle as well. You know, those graphs we used to get on, you know, on Sky or on BT, where it shows you your lines of attack. And it shows you, like, oh, 58% of Fulham attacks have come down the right-hand side with Ryan Fredericks flying down there. Sure, great. Ryan Fredericks is excellent. And Sessegnon on the other side was trying to get on the end of everything. So that's how the system worked under Jokanović. Now, Fulham are far less predictable. We can go wide to Niskins, have him trick his way through a couple of players and flick it over, or we can go outside to Wilson. And I think it means that beforehand, when Niskins was playing mostly weirdly on the right, he'd kind of be isolated with two defenders because they'd know what was going to happen, because they didn't need to have the whole pitch stretched out because they knew exactly where Fulham were going to go. It feels that we're more unpredictable. And on the back of that, a player who has the ability one-on-one that Niskins Cabano has is having a field day. And then on top of that, you've got to put into the fact that his end product just seems to be far more, far sharper this season. And I'm not sure what that development is. Maybe it's him coming off the left rather than, you know, being forced to play slightly out of position. Maybe it's him just finding a little bit more comfort in those roles, but we're seeing him reap the benefits.
Yeah. There's some great stats on this article with Niskins, just looking at some of his quality and some of his best attributes. His ball retention ability, his numbers are really high, receptions in the opposition box, shot volume, and obviously his dribbling statistics on here are absolutely exceptional as well. Niskins, as I mentioned, both times, Jack, that we've gone up has kind of been given the slight boot when it comes to the Premier League, particularly in 2021, where we went up. He was quite instrumental in that playoff run, particularly from free kicks, and then never really got a look in once Lookman came into the club. I don't want to A, assume that we're promoted because we're not, and B, I don't really think it's the debate to be having right now of who should be starting in the Prem. But do you think, all things going perfectly, Marcus Silva in charge next season, do you think Niskins has what it takes to perform in the Prem? You look at what he did to Joe Ward's on Saturday, that little shimmy and the cross into the box. I imagine most Premier League right backs aren't going to be quite so generous with him. But that skill that he did against West Brom, I mean, that is world class. He's going to beat some players, have the ability to beat some players in the Premier League as well. I just don't know, has he got a ceiling, or do you think actually he's just never really been given the opportunity in the right team with the right manager?
I don't know. Yeah, it is the honest answer. And I think it's one that, without any real visual data or ability to see, you know, what he's done there, it's really hard to judge. There are some players who just don't make that jump up. And actually, the fact that you get a little bit more time and space in the Championship and defenders stand off you a little bit more is probably useful at this point. That said, defenders lunging in at Niskins and him skipping past them has been a regular feature of this season so far. And maybe it is. If you can get him in a balanced attack that works, and you get him the ability to go through those things, then sure, why not? I mean, I'm not ruling it out by any chance, and I don't think there's a point to be made here that I think, whether it's as a starter or as someone who can make an impact off the bench, there is a place for Niskins in a Premier League side. I think there is, yeah. I think there is a player there who could cut it, at the very least, as an impact player in the Premier League. But on the whole, we're still kind of clutching at shadows in actually having statistics or even just being able to watch him play in the Premier League and really, you know what we're doing with it. So it's a little bit grasping in the dark. But I think what he's shown this season means that he should 100% be getting a chance.
Yeah. And I guess actually you kind of mentioned it there. It's the fact that now no longer is he being asked to be an impact sub after years and years and years, just always your role being, oh yeah, if we're 2-0 down, 20 minutes to go, yeah, we'll bring you on and you're going to have to somehow rescue life into matches. And, you know, he did it on a couple of occasions. And I remember that game when we were 2-0 down to Bristol City and we never got that penalty in the last minute, which was a foul on Cabano, but he was instrumental in trying to get us back into that match. He could do it. But after years and years and years of that being your only role, that must just get quite like...
tiring. He's 30 tiring, years old frustrating. Now, that's the other thing, right? So we're looking at a player who's probably coming to the end of his peak years. Now, there's obviously a little bit of give and take here, because considering he's played so much as an impact sub, you'd imagine the physical toll on him as a player has been lessened over the last couple of years. So you might get that peak stretched out a little bit longer than perhaps someone who'd been playing 90 minutes every single week. And I very much hope that's the case. But on the whole, you're still looking at a player who potentially is coming to the twilight years of their real powers. So we'll see. I think it's just interesting to keep an eye on. I think we'll get one, two good more years out of Niskins. By that point, he'll be on 8 years. And I know Harry's been banging this drum forever that he's not far off a testimonial now. He's got to keep him here until he's done 10 years with the club and we can give him the send off that he deserves.
Yeah, there's a couple of people getting bordering on that. TC, Ream, both kind of getting to... Or you wonder if Ream will ever will be playing when he gets to that point. But TC, if he stays here, there's not beyond the realms of possibility. I can't remember a Fulham testimonial in my time watching the club.
There you go. I don't know if we do them, do we?
Well, I imagine we do.
I don't know. I don't.
Really, I might understand. Be. I might be wrong. There might be someone.
I don't know if everyone does them. I don't know if they're a thing that much, like outside of like massive clubs, but who knows.
I mean, there might have been one back in the day and someone's going to send in an email like they did when I said that we played Swansea in the auto
please
glass.
Do let us know. I'd love to go to a testimonial.
Yeah,
the cookie might have got one, but I think that wasn't for 10 years.
Yeah. No, I there was a mistake last week, Jack, by the way, that a lot of people tweeted me about. I said that Fulham beat Swansea 7-0 in the Autoglass Trophy, and it was very much the FA Cup. So I got a few very nice
reminders. So you should give him more abuse next time.
Someone even came up to me in Peterborough and was like, how many people have told you that it was not the Autoglass Trophy, it was the FA Cup? I was like, yeah, a few, but thanks. Great, we're going to take another break, and then I've got my little game for Jack just to end the podcast. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast is Sammy here with Jack Collins. And so I've got a little idea for a game to play. And I've done this on the radio, actually, before this game. It's called Bronze, Silver, Gold. And I just thought it might work for a little international break podcast special. If you disagree with the choices, feel free to get involved. Now, Jack, obviously, you are famous for hosting a podcast that ranks things every week. And so this is very much up your street. It is called Bronze, Silver, Gold. Give you a category and you need to give me basically your top three in a certain category. Now, I did write some for Peter until he couldn't do the podcast today. So maybe we'll get him to do this next week, because I was going to ask him his top three Fulham performances this season, which was a kind of serious one. And then I was going to ask him his top three nice Fulham players. So basically all the people he's met, I was going to get him to rank them bronze, silver, gold, which I imagine he'll hate because he never likes revealing his sources in that way. But anyway, we'll put him on the spot next week. All right. So I've got two for you, Jack. We'll start with your Fulham one. I would like to get you to give me your bronze, silver, gold Fulham players this season. So what would you like to go with?
I'll go bronze for Niskins. I think he's been remarkable, but I think there have been players that have been ahead of him. I think
wondered if you might go with him much higher. I thought with him as your alternative gold, basically.
No,
the obvious.
I don't think you can go alternative on gold this season. It's just a bit ridiculous. I think too, my silver is Jean-Michel Seri. And the gold, I think, goes around the neck of Alexander Mitrovic. It's just, like I said at the top, right? A goal contribution every 58 minutes. It's just ludicrous. Like, it's like absolutely and utterly ludicrous numbers. Like, Messi at his peak in his prime was running those kind of numbers. Like, the year he scored 91 goals, these are the kind of numbers he was racking up. Now, I'm not saying they're the same player, right? Before I get told that I'm comparing Alexander Mitrovic to Messi. But no. Those are the kind of, you know, comparisons you can make when someone is scoring this many goals. And right now, he's unplayable. So that's what's going in there, I think. It feels like the only person that could go at the top.
Yeah, I think maybe after Saturday, Neeskins would just edge into bronze for me. Before then, though, I think I would have put in Tosin. I think that he's been phenomenal at the back. And I think you saw it in the Peterborough game that I felt like he was missed in that way. It was that aerial bombardment in the second half. Look, I like Michael Hector, but I think without Tosin, I think we are a much weaker side.
I think there's claims to be made for Marek Rodak and Bobby Reid as well. But basically, because neither of them have featured quite as, you know, heavily, consistently as those three, I think at this point, you know, when you're this kind of game, 17 games in, you need to be putting someone who's been in sort of 15, 14 starts to really get going. So that's
Wilson as well. Yeah, I mean, actually, he had a couple of quiet patches.
Yeah, but... yeah. So I think those three for me would be the top three. I'll go to you, shall I? And we'll go with your top three Fulham goals this season.
Yeah. Now this is hard. I've gone a little bit on enjoyment as well as technique here. So I've just gone for the ones that I particularly enjoyed, which I think one of them you'll think like, what, really? First one, Bobby Reid against QPR. I loved everything about this. The pass from Seri. And it was one of those moments in the Hammersmith end where it was a classic, go on, silence, hit it. Corner goal, and it being against QPR as well, it was when you knew as well that the game was won. Like the Mitrovic header was important, it was the turning point in the match, but you knew that QPR weren't going to get us back from 3-1 down. So yeah, definitely Bobby Reid against QPR. Yeah, also, I felt like Bobby Reid put to rest a couple of demons from like a couple of games earlier where he missed a load of chances against Reading. So I'd have that one as bronze. Silver, I just really enjoyed this goal, but it probably wasn't even that impressive. But it was Harry Wilson away at Birmingham. I was at this match and it was a lovely through ball from Chalobah, who I think we thought at this point was going to feature a lot more than he has. Obviously, injuries have been a big reason behind that. But it was just maybe you're learning something here that I love nothing more than a simple through ball and a good finish. But it was just really well taken. Again, it was one of those moments in the match. I think that was to make it 3-0. You knew that the game was won at that point. Decent limbs in the away end for that goal. So yeah, I've gone for Wilson against Birmingham. And I think the gold is a little bit obvious. Tom Cairney, Cardiff, best moment of the season by far. Just the way that that game was slipping away from us. It was pissing it down with rain. It felt like it was going to be a really crap one. And Cardiff were going to shithouse their way to either a 0-0 draw or a 1-0 win. On comes the captain, back, second game back, and he does that magic. So I think that's got to be my gold.
Fair. I think the goal I would have had in here in terms of pure like, oh, we're good, was Carvalho's first one. Well, Carvalho's goal, his first of the season against Huddersfield.
Yes.
Where they scored and we were like, oh, here we go. And then 2 minutes later, went straight up the other end and just scored. And it was like, oh, we're really good. Like, we're
and Bobby
Reid,
Nutmegs, one of the Huddersfield players in the build-up, I think.
It was a lot. To be honest, you could have picked all three, both the Carvalho and then both the Cavaleiro goals, which were both beautiful finishes.
I tell you what, the Mitrovic one was actually in my, as a jokes one, I was thinking of putting that in as bronze because that is still the best goal of the season. Mitrovic's first against Huddersfield where it kind of goes in off his armpit.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we've scored some terrible goals. There was the one against Forest as well where they just forgot to defend. Enjoyed that. The goal against West Brom where they passed it to him. Like, yeah. I really, really enjoyed myself for a little while in some of these. So yeah, absolutely. There were some good goals, but they were very good. Good answers. Well done.
Okay, right. This is where I think things get a bit more controversial. So this is a non-serious top three, bronze, silver, gold. So I'd like your bronze, silver, gold, top three Fulham managers you'd like to have a pint with. So you can pick them past
what do you mean
or
not
present.
Serious? That's arguably the most serious question you've ever asked me on the podcast.
Well, okay. And you clarified this in the break. They don't have to be alive. So yeah. This is a metaphorical pint. It's not going to actually happen. So yeah, bronze, silver, gold, top Fulham managers that you'd like to have a pint with.
Okay, so third is Chris Coleman.
I mean, a man that would enjoy having a pint back with you.
Yeah, so like obviously I spent some time in my life with Dean Jones because we worked together. And yeah. he was the Fulham beat writer when Cookie was taking over management. He just said that they were the best night out he's ever gone on with those with Cookie and Kit and all of that lot. So that there was just unbelievably good value. So I think just in terms of a pure good night out and just going for some beers, Chris Coleman's there on that value. That's not like, I'd love to pick his brain about lots of things, but this is more kind of just like, I think it would be just really enjoyable to go for a pint with him. Then there's, in second is the person who I think crosses the two at once. So yes, really enjoyable pint, but most, but also would love to know more about their career, their lives and everything they did. And that's Kevin Keegan.
Yes.
So Kevin Keegan would be number two for me. And then number one, Sir Bobby Robson. Obviously, what a life, what a career, and just one of the great thinkers of English football. Just I think that would, if you said to me any Fulham manager ever, it would probably be Bobby.
Yeah, 100%. I think I'm trying to think if there's anyone else in there that I'd absolutely.
I'd love to go for a glass of wine with Silver or Tagana, but I'm not sure that we'd.
Yeah, I guess actually in the question, you would never go. You wouldn't go for a pint with John Tagana, would you?
I probably would. I'd go for whatever John Tagana wanted. But a nice glass. So if you asked me, the question was three for England Fulham managers to have a glass of wine on the Riviera with. It'd probably have been Tagana, Silver, and. Maybe Jokanović. I reckon Jokanović likes a glass of wine on the river.
I mean, Jokanović has definitely got a cellar full of red, hasn't he? Really, yeah, full bodied red in the cellar. I mean, the most jealous I think I've ever been of any Fulham story is when we had David Lloyd on this podcast from There's Only One F in Fulham. Year or so ago when he was selling the book, and he talked about the time that he got invited to go have dinner with John Tagana at Tagana's favorite French restaurant on the south coast of France. And yeah, I was fairly jealous when I heard that story. Okay, yeah, I can definitely agree with all of those choices. One that you didn't mention is in my top three from my category, so I'll come on to him. So what would you like me to give my top three, non-serious?
I would like you to tell me your bronze, silver, gold of dream Fulham interviews, past, present, managers, players, people around the club, whatever. It doesn't just anything to do with Fulham.
Yeah.
But yeah, your interviews.
Okay. I mean, if I can get any three of these bookings, then I'm doing extremely well. extremely well. So in bronze, I have gone for one of my all-time kind of earliest memory cult heroes, probably the greatest player in terms of caliber, I think, to play for this club. That's a bold claim, but it's Edwin van der Sar.
Yeah.
He seems like a lovely bloke. He's obviously a proper football man, and you can see that from what he's doing as part of Ajax right now, one of the best teams in Europe, consistently, massively punching above their weight. And Edwin van der Sar is a big part to play in that. He was part of an iconic era, a club that really he was always just a little bit too big for, wasn't he? Quite frankly, the fact that he then went on later in his career when he was older to go on and win the Champions League and the Premier League multiple times for Manchester United. I'd just love to know the story of everything that came to pass of Edwin van der Sar being at Fulham for 4 years as well. It was not like he just came for one season, did an Alphonse Areola and then moved on to bigger and better things. He was here for a serious chunk of time. So he'd be my bronze. Silver. And look, I think given ill health, this probably would have been an interview that would have been better back in the day, but I would love to meet Mohamed Al-Fayed. Yeah. Like, I mean, and hopefully at a location of his choosing, maybe the top floor of Harrods, maybe book that out for us. If he still has the keys to Harrods anymore, I doubt not. But yeah, obviously a man that was behind everything that Fulham is nowadays. And I had a bit of a debate actually with someone the other day, which was, you know, see, he was saying, oh, why is there not a song for Shahid Khan? And I just was like, most owners don't get songs, right? Most owners, you don't hear, I don't know, the Villa fans talking about their CEO, even though he seems like quite a sound bloke. Like, you just don't really get that these days. Al-Fayed, even though if you look at the end of his tenure at Fulham, and it was a bit controversial, he clearly wasn't investing as much as he needed to for us to be a Premier League club. And I think he pulled the rug a little bit from under the Khan's feet in terms of what he sold them at the highest value when he not really invested in the team for years, still was, you know, instrumental to everything these days. So definitely Mohamed Al-Fayed, but my gold will always be my gold. It will always be the biggest dream is Sir Roy Hodgson.
Yeah.
I mean, what a privilege that would be one day if you ever got 5 minutes with Sir Roy. He's doing the rounds. He's around. He's not got loads going on. So, you know, if Roy, if you're listening, feel free to come on the pod. Any in there that you would agree or disagree with? I mean, imagine you'd agree with all of them. I don't think you'd tear them down.
Yeah, absolutely. I would maybe had one of the Rachels in, Rachel Unit or Rachel Yankee or Marianne Spacey, to be honest. Obviously part of that iconic Fulham ladies generation who... Yeah. You know, set the world on fire in so many ways. So they would have been maybe the ones that I would have shouted as left field. But I think your interviews are pretty nailed on. Unbelievable that there are so many legends associated with the club. It's almost impossible to pick three, right? But look, completely fair enough.
Yeah, indeed. Well, there's the top three. We're going to get Peter's top three nice Fulham players next week if he agrees to it. He might not. But yeah, let us know if you agree or disagree with some of our choices. It'd be interesting to see what you think. Get us on Twitter at Fulhamish Pod. If you've made it to this far of the podcast and you've got your opinions on what we said, particularly the silly categories, I think we can all probably agree that the top Fulham goals and players, it kind of speaks for itself, particularly the players. But yeah, top three managers you'd like to have a pint with. And top three that you'd love to either just meet or interview if ever you wanted to interview someone, or maybe you have another podcast or something like that. Let us know anyway at Fulhamish Pod. And that'll do for today. Thank you very much for listening. International break special. Fulhamish will be back on Monday with the Jack and Joe show. If you follow us on YouTube, you'll know that Jack Kelly and Joe Sansom do a weekly show over on our YouTube, which we've been building for a couple of years. And we thought we'd like it to go to a bit of a different audience. I'm sure there's lots of people here that have never been on our YouTube channel and so never encountered Jack and Joe. It's a really, really great show that they do every week. And we thought we'd give them a chance to put the show onto the podcast feed. And maybe in time you can become a regular to what they put out on YouTube. But before then, have a lovely weekend. Jack Collins, thank you very much for being on the pod today.
Thank you, Sammy. I'm excited to hear Jack and Joe go podcast. This is a new one. I mean, and I love the show. I love the show on YouTube. So delighted they're getting that that opportunity. And we'll see you on Thursday for the Thursday Club. What a week of content that is.
A big week of content. If you're going to the Fulham women's match on Sunday, do enjoy it at 2:30. They're playing Oxford United women. Still tickets available. We're going to be doing some coverage on that in next Thursday's podcast. Big game, FA Cup first round against a team that is above them in the tier system. So it'll be a big shock if they can get a result. So good luck to Fulham ladies. And if you're making it down to Motspur Park, do cheer on. The girls will be definitely rooting for them. And yeah, some analysis on that on Thursday's pod. So until then, have a great weekend. All you whites.
You whites.